Hello, everybody. This is Consciousness, the Web Course from the University of Arizona Center for Consciousness Studies. I am Dr. Bernard Bars. I will be teaching this course for the next 10 weeks. I'm going to talk a little bit about the forthcoming web course on consciousness from a scientific point of view, which is quite different in its own way from a consciousness from either a spiritual or a philosophical point of view. I will be running it twice in this school year, both in the fall and the spring. I will also teach an advanced seminar called Seminar on Mind, Brain, and Consciousness, which will be small and intense with a lot of readings. I also hope to be using a lot of music in this course, and I invite you to send me your suggestions for your favorite songs. And music gives us one kind of insight into human consciousness, just like all the other arts. And sometimes it's better to use music because music is nonverbal and we don't impose all the chatter that we have in our minds on the music, especially if we like to listen to the music. As you know, human beings have explored consciousness for thousands of years. All the humanities, the arts, and literature involve the expression and elaboration of human feelings and thoughts. That means conscious, unconscious, and what's called fringe conscious experiences. Fringe conscious experiences are experiences that are not like the sight of a coffee cup in front of your eyes. Rather, they are feelings of knowing. And we have lots of feelings of knowing, as my favorite hero in consciousness studies, William James, said so well about 100 years ago. There are lots of fringe conscious feelings, vague feelings, but they're still very, very important to us, and we will have some further discussion of that. So, everybody has talked about consciousness except for the scientists. Science is a latecomer to the study of consciousness as such, although the 19th century science was very much focused on it. However, starting in the 1990s, we began to see the first major brain imaging methods that really worked very well. For the first time in history, we could see the living brain while people were sensing, thinking, feeling, and acting. We could therefore try to understand our mind-brain, and I often refer to what we're talking about as the mind-brain because that allows us both to talk about the personal and the subjective aspect, as well as the external objective aspect. And the truth is that we are both minds and also brains, so we can constantly look at each other from the outside and also experience our own inner life. So we have a mind-brain, and after the invention of brain imaging methods, by now there are at least a dozen of them, and they're very, very good, we were able to look at the human mind-brain for the first time in history from two different points of view, both from the outside and from the inside, and to try to relate those two worlds of information to each other. And that, in a way, has been an enormous breakthrough, and I think we're only beginning to see how powerful that dual perspective on the human mind-brain really is. So in this course, I want to spend some time on the first-person perspective, which is our own experience. I want to do it through music and in other ways as well. Music is nice because it provides so many examples of the ways in which composers and performers try to evoke certain experiences. Those experiences are never the same for everybody who listens to a piece of music. And sometimes I find that I can't get into a piece of music that somebody else just loves, and vice versa. But I will provide music, or rather link to music that you can find to protect the copyright ownership of the artists and the producers. We will give links. As much as possible, I will give links to YouTube performances, by the way, because those are freely available to you. So I will provide links to music that evokes strong emotions or ideas, for me at least, and will give you a little sample for your own experiences and the thoughts you have to reflect on those experiences as well. Obviously, I welcome your suggestions as well, because each of us have a world of experience with music, the arts, other things that are important to us. And since most people have songs that they love, that will help to enliven the interaction between us as well. This is an extraordinary time of discovery, much like the first space explorations 30 years ago or 40 years ago. It has taken years for scientists to understand brain images, including the ones that have to do with feelings and with artistic events. We will continue to get better information, and we are beginning to ask better questions, which is at least as important. You can get lots of good scientific information and never ask the right questions. That has happened. It still does continue to happen sometimes. We will try to not do that. So that is the newest subject for a course on consciousness. But then also, there are traditional topics that would have been familiar to Aristotle or Plato in Western history of thought, or to the early Buddhists and Vedanta, Hinduists and Taoists and animists, and all those people who in a lot of times and places have thought very deeply about the mind-brain. You don't need a lot of equipment. I mean, we have wonderful equipment these days, but you don't really need a lot of equipment to think about your mind and about the mind of people around you. We see it all the time, and human beings do it all the time in the way of gossip, for example. We're always trying to understand each other, interpret each other, and tell stories about each other. I have a commitment to studying and teaching about consciousness, but I prefer to do it scientifically. By that I mean supporting all the ideas and claims by good evidence and careful reasoning. Now, for a lot of human history, that would have been called philosophy. And I prefer to think that science and philosophy are two sides of the same coin, that they're not fundamentally different. But currently, philosophical work and scientific work on consciousness and the brain appears to be quite different. So I'm going to emphasize a more scientific approach, and that really means an approach that is very much focused on evidence. And that could be the evidence of your subjective experience, which is really important in this course, or it could be the evidence of a brain image, or it could be the evidence of someone's report of their experience, especially for extraordinary experiences. Now, all those are very, very important and very useful, I will be spending a considerable amount of time talking about all of them because they are so important. I think the study of subjective experience in Western science started really with the Renaissance. We tend to say, incorrectly, I think, that consciousness has only been recently discussed scientifically. That's not really true. When Isaac Newton opened a little crack in the shutters of his room window in Cambridge in the 1600s, he let in a little ray of sunlight and let it fall on a glass prism and discovered that all the colors of the rainbow come out on the other side of the glass prism. All those colors are subjective colors. They are not there in the physical stimulus, which, as you know, is the wavelengths of light. The human eye imposes colors and color categories on the physics of light. So that, I think, is a classic experiment on human consciousness. Color is profoundly important to us as human beings and to creatures like us, who use color so much. So I'm happy to use subjective experiences like that. I think we do it all the time. I'm also happy to use brain evidence, and we will be talking about that. I also like to learn from novelists. Novelists are an extraordinary source, by the way, of information about the mind and the brain. There is an extraordinary tradition as well from mystics, or people who believed they were having mystical experiences, like the Russian novelist Dostoevsky, for example, and a large number of other people. There are, of course, the meditation traditions, which go along both with Asian philosophy going back to the very beginning of writing about 2,500 years ago. And also in Western philosophy, there really is a lot more interaction between Asia and Europe and the Middle East than we tend to normally think. We tend to separate them. And that is not really accurate. It's clear that there were streams of influence going back and forth at least 2,500 years ago, certainly about topics like meditation. And there are very striking similarities between Buddhism, Vedanta, and Plato's thought, for example, 2,400 years ago. I want to get my numbers right here. I also like to learn from clinical psychology schools like Jung and Freud, which are treasures in themselves. They are amazing, and they are controversial from a scientific point of view because it's been difficult to test the hypotheses that come out of clinical psychology. But on the other hand, we are getting a flow of new evidence that is consistent with the thinking of people like Freud and Jung and all those other people along those lines, which is not to say that they were 100% right. I don't think they were. But it does mean that they have important things to tell us. And then anthropology turns out to be a wonderful source of information. And recently we are getting what are called human universals, where anthropologists have collected the features in common between all the groups and tribes and societies that they have studied over a period of more than 100 years. And it's an immense body of learning. And there are certain things that human beings have in common in all of those traditions that have been studied. We're getting another flow of information from genetics and from epigenetics, which I will spend a little bit of time talking about. Very, very important, for example, in terms of sleep in, dreaming, and waking. Sleep, dreaming, and waking are three of our most obvious conscious or unconscious daily states, and they are all three dictated by genetics. We are all living on the 24-hour cycle, and they are also influenced by epigenetics, meaning that if you stay up overnight to study for an exam, the genes that control the neurons or some of the neurons in your brain are actually changed or affected. Their expression is affected, I should say. It's not that the heritable genes are changed, but rather the expression of the DNA is affected. So that's all very important. Then there are the wisdom traditions, which is just about every culture under the sun and anything else. So when we talk about consciousness, we have a huge domain that we're talking about. I'm going to focus on the scientific parts because the scientific parts are the parts that I feel I'm allowed to talk about. Or to put it slightly differently, I don't think I'm an authority on music or on meditation or on telling you the nature of consciousness. I think I can be an authority if I have a piece of evidence and that I can tell you about and that you can also experiment with and that anybody in the world can experiment with and see if it's true or if it's not true. In that sense, conventional science gives us a sense of authority. That is to say, some kind of legitimacy is probably a better word than authority. Some kind of legitimacy. I can't tell you about the wonderful itch in my left toe that I had this morning because why should you believe me? There's no way you can check on that. But I can tell you about Newton's color prism, as I just did, and you can take a glass prism, a three-sided prism, and simply let some sunlight fall on it, and you can see exactly the same phenomena that I see. And of course, we can talk about people who have different color experiences as well, because there are people who do. In any case, that's a fundamental point for me, the question of legitimacy, which is basically how come I'm allowed to be here and talk with you, and obviously the course is set up so that we can have two-way communication, and what gives me the legitimacy to do that? And ultimately, in conventional science, that legitimacy comes from the evidence that you and I can actually share. Well, on top of all that, I'm also interested in altered states of consciousness and higher states, which we will have a little bit to talk about, although the truth is that each of these topics deserves a course of its own. The higher states, and I'm going to use the term higher states because it's conventional and worry later about whether higher states are really higher or lower or what, but the higher states have been explored in exquisite detail in the meditation traditions, which go back again to the beginnings of human writing and human culture. So we're talking about some 25 centuries that we know about because there's writing, and surely much more than that that we don't know about because it didn't come down to us in written forms. So we're not sure exactly what people at that time and in those places were actually thinking. So it's all grist for the mill. This year, as I mentioned, I hope to add a lot of musical demonstrations using links that you can bring up on the web. And I will ask you to tell everybody else about your own favorite music if it demonstrates something important about consciousness. Having said all that, I'm happy to discuss things that we cannot prove to each other. This is an open discourse, and everything we want to discuss should be open to talking, testing, and logic. It's obviously fine to discuss things that we may not be able to prove to each other, but then it's important to say so that we have to respect skepticism as well as belief. So having said that, I'm happy to discuss everybody's ideas and experiences and to take them very seriously. At some point, however, I might end up saying, I wonder, what is the evidence for that idea? So that, consider that a personal quirk of mine. So that's my basic introduction to you for the course. The course is being presented through the Center for Consciousness Studies at the University of Arizona in Tucson. You're welcome to Google Consciousness, the web course, along with my name if you'd like, Bernard Bars, spelled with two A's, B-A-A-R-S, and the Center for Consciousness Studies at the University of Arizona is something that will just pop up in Google. And obviously you're very welcome to enroll in the course, or if you've already enrolled, to go to the B2L site and download the audio lectures and the PowerPoints, which will be available for you there. I'm also going to be podcasting the audio parts of my lectures on iTunes U, and I look forward to that. And if anyone who is not in the course would like to communicate with the Center for Consciousness Studies, you are most welcome to do so. Thank you very much.